The following interview was recorded for CFRO The Pulse, Vancouver Co-op Radio's daily news show. The Pulse airs Monday to Friday at 7 a.m. on 100.5 FM and streaming live at cooperadio.org. I'm your host, James Mingy. The 18th annual Downtown Eastside Heart of the City Festival opens tomorrow and runs until November 7th. This year's theme is Stories We Need to Hear. In the words of late Downtown Eastside poet Sandy Cameron, when we tell our stories, we draw our own maps and question the maps of the powerful. Each of us has something to tell, something to teach. Among the stories we need to hear are those from the Me Too movement. What Now is a multi-perspective documentary theater and dance creation about the Me Too movement produced by Alley Theater in partnership with Good Night Out Vancouver. I recently spoke with Marissa Emma Smith, artistic producer of Alley Theatre, about their production, What Now? Hello, Marissa, and welcome to Co-op Radio.
Hello, thank you for having me.
Now, I know that your production company, the Alley Theatre, are going to be presenting a show at the Heart of the City Festival called What Now? Or I guess maybe hashtag What Now? Tell us a little bit about what that show is.
So it is a multi-perspective, what we're calling docu-theater and dance creation. So it is, it's responding to the Me Too movement in and around that subject matter. So I've interviewed around 40 people and have had about 70 hours of interview content from which to make an 80-minute show. and my co-director, Amber Barton, has been working with me, and we have basically, Amber has staged, subtle movements that support the stories and anecdotes and responses on stage. And Headphone Verbatim, in case people haven't heard of it, is a style of documentary theater where audio interviews, much like this one, are taken and then edited into an audio script, and then performers on stage have earbuds in, or headphones or earbuds, and they speak the words directly from the audio interview. So the person who is telling the story and that's being interviewed is speaking straight into their ear, and they speak the words as they hear them on stage. So there's no written script. And so the idea and what actually, if the effect of it is that it's quite intimate and subtle and realistic, and on stage every, stutter or pause or breath or laugh is captured. And it's almost like the performers on stage are a vessel for the person speaking into their ear. So in a way, it's allowed the people that I've interviewed to be anonymous and have an anonymity in these sometimes vulnerable stories, but also brings them to life in a very live and human way, and also very subtle. I started working with Amber very early on in this process to develop a dance kind of score to the piece that underscores and accentuates the themes or the feeling of the story. And it's so subtle sometimes. And we were just talking about how, you'll be listening to this story, and then all of a sudden the actors are all in a line and you're like, how did that happen? But it makes sense in that moment. So that's sort of an overall kind of a feel for what we're doing. I hope that answers your question.
To a certain degree. Yeah. So the what the actors hear through their earbuds, only the actors are hearing that, right? The audience doesn't. What the audience hears is what the actor is interpreting on stage. Mm-hmm.
Only the actor that says the specific story or line that the other actors, like, say if there's one story, there's five actors and the other four have never heard the other person's voice. the other interviewee's voice. It's really only actor, you know. We try to keep the content special, and it's sacred. You know, these stories, they're, you know, people are, you know, trusting us with their stories in a way, and so we really want to respect that.
So is each performance different then? Does each individual actor hear the same story for each performance, or is it something new and spontaneous every time?
No, it is set. And so it's a set audio script in which, you know, the stories are told in a certain order, in order to lead the audience through the experience in a careful way, so that, you know, you're not getting too much, you know, traumatizing things back to back, or that, you know, that what we're trying to ask or say with the piece is clear. But, you know, I did. And when I was earlier on in the process of developing this, I thought maybe I can do like a show A and a show B and a show C, because I talked to so many people. And the hardest thing was editing it down into this 80-minute piece, and having to not be able to include certain stories. But then I realized, you know, it's important that, to me, in the capacity that I have right now, I was like, it's more important to be able to say something cohesive and present something and put our energy into this one thing as opposed to dissipate it. But you definitely could do that with this medium, because it doesn't require as much rehearsal. And the actors don't have to memorize the lines. So you could do a different show every night, and it would still come across as real and immediate. You know, there would be little flubs, because obviously the technique does take some practice in performance, and Amber's choreography, even though it comes across as very subtle, is very specific and very I don't know, it's highly organized and structured. So one thing leads to another, to another, to another. And so if you change one element, it's a domino effect. Yeah.
Well, it sounds like the sort of production that it should come across to the audience as something spontaneous, but it sounds like, you know, there are hundreds and hundreds of hours of work that go into ensuring that it comes across as looking spontaneous.
Yeah.
Or am I completely misinterpreting what you're saying?
I think that's a good way of putting it. I think the show does change a little depending on the audience, just like any theater show. You know, an audience will laugh longer, and so it just changes the rhythm a little bit. And there are moments where the actors do take the earbuds out and will say, you know, when I interviewed the people telling the stories, I also interviewed them about love, and I interviewed them about, you know, I gathered some demographic information. So we share their gender, their age, their cultural background, things like that. But then we also share stuff like, you know, their favorite food or a hobby that they have or something they do on the weekend. And that is a way that it's those details are, you know, the intention is that it's humanizing the stories and also kind of giving context for what their lived experience might have impacted their experience. And also in lots of instances, it brings humor, which is so important in this work. And so sometimes when the actors take the earbuds out and say that information, it comes across just ever so slightly differently depending on the audience. And so that is a way that the piece lives and stays alive. And it's also, you know, we're building a really super intimate space here at the Russian Hall. So there's not a lot of divide between performer and audience member, even though there is social distance. It's not a traditional theater space where the audience is super dark and the actors are far away. And, you know, it's the hope is that it feels like, you know, we're all people in the space and all, you know, on the same level in a way.
You mentioned that this show has grown out of the Me Too movement. Can you tell me a little bit about the process of how the show was developed? You know, what was it about that inspired you to create the show in the first place? And you said that you interviewed several dozen people yourself. I'm wondering if you could tell me a little bit about that process.
Yeah, for sure. So I started working on it in 2018 and started talking with Amber, my co-director, quite soon after. I think I'd only done an interview before I talked to her because I was like, I want to figure out how to develop this with movement and maybe you could work with me on that. And so we had a lot of coffee shop dates to figure out the tone that we wanted to achieve with it. And then, I went deeper into interviews. I was mentored by a Lebanese artist who really taught me a lot about interviewing and trust building, and worked with this medium in Lebanon with women who had been sex trafficked. And I don't know if that's the right term, but anyways.
Well, we know what you mean, yes.
yeah. And so, I mean, she came from that experience and knowing, wanting to really impart just how important it is to be respectful of people's stories, respectful of their consent in giving forth this information, and in their own words. And so that really started me on a journey of trying to figure out what is the best process in interviewing people about this kind of content, And at first I had, I'd put together a release, a very typical legal documentary style release form that a lot of documentary and filmmakers use. And then I sort of halfway through, some of my interviewees had questions about it. And I started to realize like, how do we practice consent when we are doing documentary? And this piece is about consent. And so I ended up developing more of a letter of agreement or a memorandum of understanding. And most of the wording ended up being more like what will Alley Theatre provide for the interviewee in terms of their understanding of the work and collaboration. And so through that process, I ended up sending an audio clip of, sending the clip that I would like to use to the interviewees, and then also sending a video of our work in progress so they could see how their clip fit into the whole piece to give more context. And it just felt important to me that the interviewees got all those pieces so that they could consent to something that they understood, because it's really hard to consent to something that you don't know what that is. It's not actual consent, right? It's misinformed consent or something. I don't know. And I just want to say, after explaining all of that, most of the people that I've spoken to have been just incredibly generous and trusting, and I just feel like I've met some of the most interesting and amazing people through this process. And it's been a real gift during a time where we can feel isolated and locked down in COVID and things like that. But I've been able to connect with people and have really meaningful conversations about this. And so I just feel very grateful and honored to all the people I talk to, even if only a small little piece of what they said is integrated into the piece, or even if I wasn't able to include their story this time around. If anybody out there's listening to this that I interviewed, thank you so much.
Yeah. How did you go about locating, finding the people? How did they find out about you and come to tell you their stories?
Well, a couple of ways, I guess. We were early on in the process. The Vancouver Courier approached us after our one of our partners, Goodnight Out Vancouver, had tweeted about the project, and that got the attention of the Vancouver Courier. And then we ended up on the front page of the Vancouver Courier. And so some of the story, some people, we had a you know, a website sign up or an email where you could, request an interview that way. And then some of it was Good Night Out also helped us secure some of the interviews. Some of them were through friends of friends, family, starting with my own network and kind of moving out. And then sometimes it was like people who were involved with the production artistically then would, you know, pass it on to others, and then they would approach me separately. And then I also did some specific outreach when I went back to do some interviews in 2021 in June. I did some more targeted outreach myself. I think it's like it actually kind of snowballed, because I interviewed one person and then they told a bunch of people, and then I got interviews from that. It was kind of like the more people that I interviewed, they would tell other people, and then they would email me to get an interview, that kind of thing. Yeah.
And I'm curious also about the editing process, I suppose. Mm-hmm. If you've recorded dozens of hours of interviews and you've got to whittle it down to an hour and 20 minutes, were there certain things that you had in mind that you were specifically looking for when creating the show? Or did you just go through each story and think, oh, that's a really compelling one, and set it aside and go back to it?
Well, I mean, there were so many factors, right? And but I think it was really helpful that I did do it over like a 2.5 year period, because the first round that I did, I sort of was just learning about the medium. I'd never done editing myself, and so I was learning how to edit, and I was learning, and I kind of was letting the interviewee subjects kind of tell me what I think the story should be, and so I was really guided by that. And then we got feedback from these presentations that we did from our initial workshop, and then I read all the feedback forms and thought about what's missing. It's really important to me that as many different types of lived experiences, from different abilities to different cultural backgrounds, ages, different gender types, could be involved in the work. And so when I'm editing now, which I'm still kind of tweaking, it's all about like there's sort of like this sort of Rubik's cube of content of like who can say what story on stage. So when I was casting, it took me a while to cast certain roles because I wanted to make sure that I kind of had to cast at the same time as editing, because I would say, okay, I think I want to include your story. Okay, so then I have to cast this role, and then you're going to have approval over, I'll send you the video of the person I think I want to cast. And then from there, hone it even further. And so it's always, to me, it's about making sure that as many voices are heard that need to be heard. And then based on those voices, what are they saying? How to make the dramatic structure work so that the audience is engaged, and that there's variation, that there's the subtle kind of systemic harassment that happens in the workplace. And then there's, the kind of gray area of consent in that conversation. And then there's the more violent assaults that happen. And I was really lucky that, a lot of the stories that are included aren't the kind of typical stories that you think about when you think about the Me Too movement or think about sexual assault or harassment. They're very, I think compelling in a way that, it's not right to say that, oh, well, someone's Me Too story is compelling, but in a way that, because we don't hear hear certain stories, and so for me it was about like, what have we not heard of? What have we not heard in the Me Too movement? and what needs to come forward from that. And then balancing it all so that the evening is, you come away from it going like, feeling like empowered or somewhat hopeful or that it was healing. Yeah, that was a really long-winded answer. I don't know if I did a very good job.
I'm finding this conversation very compelling, and I very much wish we had more time, but we sort of have to get a few practical details out of the way now. Mm. I know it's the performances for the Heart of the City Festival will be at the Russian mm-hmm. Hall in Strathcona.
Right.
What are those dates?
October 28th, which is a 2-for-1 preview. We start October 28th. To November 7th.
One other thing I noticed on the website for the Heart of the City Festival is that some of the performances are sort of, I guess, segregated is the way to say it, depending on, well, maybe you can explain it. What are the three separate shows that are separate from the general public, I should say?
Yeah, there's three shows that are, we like to say, special.
Yeah, that's a better word than segregated.
It's hard. I think we're living in a really divisive time.
Oh, yeah, it's a whole new language we need to learn, and I'm happy to learn it, but it's, I'm old. It takes me a long time to learn stuff now. Anyway, the three special shows.
Yeah, so there are shows that we wanted to we tried this a little bit in when we did our 2019 workshop presentations. We had what we called gender specific performances, and this is something that we talked about with a lot of our artistic advisors and people on our team and some of my interviewees as well around. What it's like to experience this show in different contexts, and how can we create as many options for people to see this and witness this, and what's going to make them feel safe, and supported. So we do have an emotional support worker, a registered counselor at every show, and a post-show facilitation, like a facilitated conversation after every show, and that was part of my reasoning for wanting to keep the show short so that people could, reflect afterwards together and talk about, how do we create a culture of consent or just how they're feeling and be together in a facilitated, a professionally facilitated environment. But sometimes these conversations are hard to have when we're not in a room where people of similar lived experiences are with us, and I think so. We wanted to create spaces where, if you're female identifying, including that means if you're a trans woman or if you're non-binary and you want to go to that night and you just want to be with some female identifying folks and experience that the show in that room. With a female identifying facilitator and emotional support person, you can do that. Same for male identifying people. And that includes, trans men and non-binary people as well. If they wanted to experience the room with male identifying, people will see the show and then go to a talk back afterwards. That one's facilitated by David Hatfield from Manology. There's a broad spectrum of gender experience. We also felt it was really important to have also a dedicated performance for people who identify as trans or non-binary. Even though they're totally welcome to come to any performance, in addition, the male identifying and female identifying performances, we have, I did end up interviewing quite a few people who are trans and who are trans or non-binary. And I think that it just felt right to invite that and have that as an option for people. And that will be facilitated by Tenille Gaib. Yeah, I think it's just about giving people options, you know? Like, I think it's not, there are still many shows that people can come to, and I feel like it's just about, you know, giving people, you know, I think especially after COVID too, like people just, we need to be sensitive about how people are wanting to be in space with people. And so if that's all, that option is there, then, and people want to take us up on that, then that's great. And we hope that we can provide an environment that's really supported. We also have Sabrina Semington, who's an artist working in the Downtown East Side and identifies as a trans woman and incredibly talented. And I felt like, you know, just wanted to celebrate her and her work. And you know, I think she's quite well known in the community. And so maybe this is a chance to you know, have that celebration as well. It's a sense that I've won, but it's coming from a place like in my heart that just wants to be welcoming and give space for people to witness this work in whatever way they feel they want to.
Are the shows in person only at the Russian Hall, or can people tune in online if they feel more comfortable staying at home and logging in on their computer?
Unfortunately, they are live only in person. We talked a lot about that, about, you know, because sometimes, you know, it does make it more accessible to people for if they can stay at home, but we also felt like we wouldn't be able to provide the kind of care, like the emotional support team or the facilitated dialogue afterwards. Like, it's just not the same if you're not in the room. And so because we weren't able to provide the care that we would want to for in an online format, we've decided to keep it live in person only.
Well, sadly, we've gone a bit past our time, so I'm sorry to say, but I have to say thank you very much, Marissa, for taking some time and speaking with us here on Co-op Radio.
Well, thank you very much. Whenever I tune into Co-op Radio, you're always saying so many important things, and you're just an incredible resource to the community. So, yeah, thank you.
Well, thank you very much for saying so. That was Marissa Emma Smith, artistic producer of Alley Theatre. There's a 2-for-1 preview performance of What Now on Thursday evening, October 28th. And details about the other performances, including the 3 special gender-specific performances, along with links to purchase tickets, can be found at heartofthecityfestival.com. CFRO The Pulse is brought to you by the Local Journalism Initiative, a program funded by Heritage Canada and administered through the Community Radio Fund of Canada.